Our third reading is from the book of Acts, chapter 12. About that time, King Herod laid violent hands upon some who belonged to the church. He had James, the brother of John, killed with the sword. After he saw that it pleased the Jews, he proceeded to arrest Peter also. This was during the festival of the unleavened bread. When he had seized Peter, Herod put him in prison and handed him over to four squads of soldiers to guard him, intending to bring him out to the people after the Passover. While Peter was kept in prison, the church prayed fervently to God for him. The very night before Herod was going to bring him out, Peter, bound with two chains, was sleeping between two soldiers, while guards in front of the door were keeping watch over the prison. Suddenly, an angel of the Lord appeared, and a light shone in the cell. The angel tapped Peter on the side and woke him, saying, "Get up quickly." And the chains fell off Peter's wrists. The angel said to him, "Fasten your belt and put on your sandals." He did so. Then he said to him, "Wrap your cloak around you and follow me." Peter went out and followed him. He did not realize that what was happening with the angel's help was real. Peter thought he was seeing a vision. After they had passed the first and the second guard, they came before the iron gate leading into the city. It opened for them of its own accord, and they went outside and walked along a lane, when suddenly the angel left him. Then Peter came to himself and said, "Now I am certain that the Lord has sent his angel and rescued me from the hands of Herod and from all that the Jewish people were expecting." As soon as he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose other name was Mark, where many had gathered and were praying. When he knocked at the outer gate, a maid named Rhoda came to answer. On recognizing Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed that instead of opening the gate, she ran in and announced that Peter was standing at the gate. They said to her, "You are out of your mind." But she insisted that it was so. They said, "It is Peter's angel." Well, meanwhile, Peter continued knocking. And when they opened the door, they saw him and were amazed. Peter motioned to them with his hand to be silent and described for them how the Lord had brought him out of the prison. And he added, "Tell this to James and to the believers." Then he left and went to another place. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I want to know what the angel looked like. I want to know what that angel in the story looked like. I'm betting that it wasn't a chubby-cheeked cherub. No, I'm thinking that this angel looked more like a truck driver. Because this was a divine being capable of masterminding a prison break. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Peter was in prison, set to be executed the next day. It was nighttime, and somehow he had managed to fall asleep. He was awakened by a tap on his side. The text says it was an angel who woke him up. Well, this truck driver-like angel barked a series of orders at Peter. "Get up, fasten your belt, put on your sandals, follow me." Before Peter was fully awake, his chains had disappeared and he was out of prison, walking the darkened streets a free man. Well, the angel disappears, and Peter makes his way to the house where his friends, his fellow believers, are gathered. He knocks on the door, but remember, it's the middle of the night. A maid named Rhoda is stuck responding to this late night knock. Now, she's not going to open the door unless she knows who is on the other side. When she realizes it's Peter, imprisoned, about to be executed, Peter, she runs back to tell the others, leaving Peter standing outside, cooling his heels. She's so excited. She can't wait to tell the others, but they don't celebrate with her because they don't believe her. "You must be out of your mind," the others tell her, because there is no way that imprisoned, about to be executed, Peter is loitering outside the front door. Now, I'm with the others. Rhoda has to be out of her mind because this story is impossible to believe. Angels busting people out of jail. You must be out of your mind to think that God is in the business of breaking people out of prison. Now, this is such a fun story, especially the part about Rhoda. It's such a fun story that it's easy to miss that it's a serious story. This is how the passage begins. "About that time, King Herod laid violent hands upon some who belonged to the church." Herod had James, the brother of John, killed with a sword. And then Herod went after Peter. So one leader dead, another about to be executed. And hovering over all of this is the figure of Herod. Herod is a tyrant. He's a piece of work. And he is hell-bent on destroying the church. And at that time in its young life, the church was small, vulnerable, fragile. So let's see, young, fragile, vulnerable church versus powerful, unstable tyrant. You would have to be out of your mind to think that the church could survive something like that. Another time, another place, another tyrant. Pharaoh was his name. He was making life miserable for the Hebrew slaves. Now Moses took on the job of representing the slaves. What a ridiculous idea. Slaves don't get representation. You would have been out of your mind to think that Moses stood a chance in those negotiations. But Moses took on Pharaoh. Well, actually God took on Pharaoh, and amazingly, miraculously, God won. God brought the people of Israel out of Egypt, out of slavery, and that exodus out of Egypt is remembered each year at the time of the Passover. Now, the story of Peter being rescued from jail takes place on Passover. I missed that the first few times I read through the passage. It's Passover, the time when Peter and the early church would be remembering and celebrating the power of God to liberate and rescue and set free. But I bet Peter wasn't thinking about the Exodus story as he languished in prison. You would have to be out of your mind to think that God is in the business of freeing slaves. But that's the claim of today's story. God is in the business of setting people free, smashing chains, breaking prison walls. I love this story. It's so strong and powerful, but it's hard for me to believe that such things happened. No, that's not right. I believe that such things happened. What I struggle to believe is that they can happen again. In the late 80s and early 90s, I was a member of a church made up primarily of Czechoslovakian immigrants. They were deeply connected to their homeland, and every year they had a special worship service in which they prayed for freedom in their native land. At the time, the communist government seemed invincible. I attended the service every year, but secretly, I thought the people of the congregation were out of their minds, because you must be out of your mind to think that God is in the business of toppling oppressive regimes. But of course, I remember another worship service held in that church in the summer of 1990, when we gave thanks to God for what had happened in Czechoslovakia and other Eastern European nations. We prayed our thanks to the God of liberation and freedom, and we were out of our minds with joy and hope. We have more recent examples of oppressive regimes coming to an end. I'm thinking about Egypt and Libya and Tunisia. Now, was God at work liberating the people of those nations in the same way God liberated the slaves in Egypt? Did God help to break their chains the way God broke Peter's chains? Now, I've thought and thought and thought about this, and my answer is, I don't know. I really don't know. I have an undergraduate and a master's degree in politics and history, and I know that things happen in nations because of a very complicated interplay of economic forces, ideology, individual personalities, cultural shifts. You have to be out of your mind to think that tyrants are toppled because God makes a decision that their time is over. And yet, this morning's story suggests a different truth. It makes the claim that God has the power and the will to intervene in situations of fear and hopelessness. The story of the Exodus and the story of Peter's prison break suggests that the future, my future, your future, our future, can be different than the past. When God enters into the world, prison walls crumble, empires fall, tyrants weep, people are set free. That's what God does. Do you need to be set free? No, we don't live under Pharaoh or Herod or Assad. But still, I'm betting that all of us need to be set free from something. Some of us need to be set free from worry about our financial situation. Some of us long to be set free from feeling the need to please others with our lives. I know a man who wants to be set free from the idea that his life has been wasted if he doesn't achieve a certain level of success in his chosen occupation. I know a woman who'd like to be set free from her addiction to alcohol. I know a teenage girl who longs to be set free from a fear of failure. We all want to be set free from something, but how often does that kind of liberation actually take place? Does anyone really change that much? I mean, sure, we can make small changes, minor alterations, but it's pretty hard to make big, dramatic changes in who we are and how we live. You'd have to be out of your mind to think that people can really fundamentally change. Gregory Boyle is a Jesuit priest who for over 20 years has served in a Los Angeles neighborhood with a high concentration of gang activity. In his book, Tattoos on the Heart, he tells stories of the mostly Hispanic young men and women he has encountered in his ministry. A big part of his job is helping ex-gang members find jobs. Nothing stops a bullet like a job is the motto of Homeboy Industries, a collection of businesses that Boyle created that includes a bakery, a cafe, and a silkscreen shop. Well, Boyle tells the story of Luis in his mid-20s, who had been among the savviest drug dealers in his community. He and Father Boyle, who's called G by his parishioners, knew each other for more than a decade, and any offer of a job was always graciously declined. But when his daughter Tiffany was born, things changed. Luis wanted to work at the bakery, and his natural leadership abilities soon moved him up to foreman. Well, one of his responsibilities as foreman was to give tours to visitors to the bakery. After one tour with a group of farmers, Boyle recounts the following conversation with Luis. I ask him, how'd the tour go? Damn, G, Luis shakes his head. What's up with white people anyway? I was actually curious as to what was up with us. I don't know what's up with us. I mean, damn, he says. They're always using the word great. We do? Oh, yeah. This bunch of farmers stroll in here and they see the place and it's all clean and the machines are working proper and they say, oh, this place is great. And then they see enemies working together and they say, you fellas are great. Then they taste the bread and they go, this bread, oh, it's great. I mean, why do white people always use the word great? I tell them I don't know. But trust me, every opportunity I could find after that, I tell him how great he is, just to mess with him a little. Well, Boyle writes about an incident that happened some 4 months later. It's nearly closing time, and I arrive at the bakery in the evening. Louise sees me, and he rushes outside. Hey, G, you're not going to believe what happened to me yesterday after my shift. Louise proceeds to tell me that after work, he goes to pick up his 4-year-old daughter, Tiffany, at the babysitter's. He puts her in the car, and they drive to their tiny apartment, where, for the first time, Luis is paying rent with honestly earned money. He unlocks the front door, and Tiffany scurries in down the hallway. She plants her feet in the living room, extends her arms, and takes in the whole room with her eyes. And then she declares, with an untethered smile, "This is great." What's great, Tiffany? Luis asks. My home, she says. Boyle writes, Luis seems to be unable to speak at exactly this moment. Our eyes find each other and our souls well up along with our eyes. I point at him and I say, you did this. You've never had a home in your life. Now you have one. You did this. You were the biggest drug dealer in town, and you stopped and baked bread instead. You did this. You've never had a father in your life, and now you are one. And I hate to have to tell you, but you are great. You have to be out of your mind to think that anyone could change that much. You have to be out of your mind to think that God is in the business of smashing the chains that bind us, that God is in the business of setting people free. Father Boyle is out of his mind. Luis is out of his mind. I want to be out of my mind too. But this breaking of chains, it is complicated, hard work. The people of Israel wandered around in the desert for 40 years before they reached the promised land. And then they found the promised land, well, it wasn't all it was cracked up to be. The Egyptians and the Libyans and the Tunisians have discovered what so many have learned before them. Creating a nation after years of tyranny is hard. One step forward, two steps back kind of work. Anyone brave enough to embrace a new future, to take hold of a second chance, to do what Luis did, discovers that it is a long, hard road. There's another chapter to Luis's story. It happened a few months after that great conversation on a Wednesday afternoon. He was loading the trunk of his car, readying himself for a camping trip with friends. Two gang members, with their faces covered, entered their enemy's territory, looking for somebody to take out. They saw Luis and must have thought to themselves, he'll do. They walked up to him and they executed him. This world we live in, it is messy and it is complicated. And even with God's good work, this side of heaven, things are incomplete. Justice is imperfect. Things are not the way they are supposed to be. But that doesn't stop God, and it shouldn't stop us from throwing the weight of our lives towards smashing the chains that bind God's people. Today's story makes the claim that God is at work in our world and in our lives. When God enters into this world, prison walls crumble, empires fall, tyrants weep, people are set free. That's what God does. To believe that, well, you have to be a little bit out of your mind. To live into that truth, oh, you have to be a little bit out of your mind. May we be out of our minds as we follow this God who wants nothing more than to set us all free.